This is Radio Eco Shop with your host, Alex Smith.
I want to investigate the stunning new study claiming 14,000 Americans have already died from radiation that floated over from the Fukushima nuclear accident in Japan. Two longtime American anti-nuclear activists with decades of experience in the field of radiation uncovered unsettling information even in the sparse announcements published by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Center for Disease Control, the CDC. Joseph J. Mangano, the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project at radiation.org, co-founded, I might say, by Dr. Ernest Sternglass, Mangano has published scholarly articles and books like Low-Level Radiation and Immune System Disorders, An Atomic Era Legacy, and Radioactive Baby Teeth, The Cancer Link. On December 19th, Joseph Mangano, with co-author Jeanette Sherman, issued a press release about their newest medical article titled 14,000 U.S. Deaths Tied to Fukushima Reactor Disaster Fallout. This caused a storm of criticism and alarm. I heard about Jeanette Sherman a couple of years ago as a seasoned doctor and medical researcher. She was part of a study of thousands of baby teeth. The teeth showed higher levels of radioactive strontium-90 in children within 40 miles of any nuclear power plant. Sherman, as we will hear, was also the English editor of a large collection of papers about the health impacts of the Chernobyl nuclear power accident in the Ukraine. Let's talk with Jeanette Sherman.
Radio EcoShock.
A new study claims there were more American casualties from the Fukushima nuclear accident than all U.S. combat deaths in Iraq. Think about that. Joseph Mangano and Jeanette Sherman published their peer-reviewed study in the December 2011 edition of the International Journal of Health Services. I'm Alex Smith. We have toxicologist and internal medicine specialist Dr. Jeanette Sherman on the line with us now. Dr. Sherman, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much. You're in my favorite city.
Well, I'm pleased to talk with you. Now, just to orient listeners, I first heard about you years ago in the baby tooth study. Briefly, tell us, what was that about?
Well, we did a follow-up study with the Radiation and Public Health Group collecting baby teeth and testing them for strontium-90. This is an isotope that never appeared on Earth until the first atom bomb was blown off. And strontium-90 is produced when nuclear power plants function 24/7, and it is carried by the wind and rain and snow, deposited upon grasslands, and is taken up by dairy animals and concentrated in their milk. And when a woman is pregnant and drinks milk and dairy products, which she should, the strontium-90 becomes concentrated in the unborn's teeth and bones, and by collecting teeth that children normally shed when they're about 6 years old, we were able to measure the strontium-90 levels. And we found interesting things in that there was higher rates of various cancers in children born within 50 miles of not only cancer in children, but also in their parents, and in children born within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant. That's the short story. The original strontium-90 study was done in St. Louis in the 50s and resulted in stopping above-ground nuclear testing.
Very important. Well, now you and Dr. Mangano have published a new paper which will stretch the belief of many listeners. How could Americans have died from the nuclear power accident at faraway Fukushima Daiichi in Japan?
Well, we know, and you are in one of the key places in the world, that the reactors that melted down, they tried to contain them using water, millions of gallons of water, which then flowed out into the Pacific Ocean and also went up along the Aleutian Islands and down the coast of Western Canada and Western United States. Levels were detected within less than 2 weeks in the United States. Fallout, mostly cesium-137, but whenever you have cesium-137, you also have strontium-90, and they also found levels of iodine-131 across the United States. And we know that unless the Earth stops turning, that this kind of a fallout will ultimately contaminate the entire northern hemisphere. obviously greater fallout in Japan and close to Japan than further away, but we know from Chernobyl that it went around the entire northern hemisphere.
Please tell us how you came up with the estimate of 14,000 extra deaths after that wave of Fukushima radiation hit the United States in the spring of 2011.
I would ask that you interview Mr. Mangano, because he is a statistical guru of our group. But essentially, we looked at death rates before Fukushima and immediately after Fukushima for various years, and then we compared with death data produced by the U.S. government from the CDC, Center for Disease Control, plus EPA data, which unfortunately is limited, and it's just, it turns out statistically that through about seven cities, we were able to find higher rates of death from children, yes, less than 1 year of age, but also throughout the population.
But I thought radiation deaths only showed up decades later due to cancer. How could people die so quickly after that radioactive rain hit the U.S.?
Well, let's say that you are a cancer survivor, and you've had chemotherapy, and you've had radiation and CT scans and PET scans. It doesn't take much to push you over the edge because your immune system is compromised. And if you've already got illnesses, it doesn't take much that you can no longer cope with the stresses that you've been able to cope with. The issue with the children less than 1 year of age, which was also, by the way, found in British Columbia, is that the most vulnerable among us are the unborn or the newborns. Their immune systems are not fully formed, and the dosages per pound are much higher than they are for, say, a 150-pound person if you are a 4 or 5-pound baby.
Yes, the British Columbia Coroner's Service said that they found more sudden infant deaths in the first half of 2011 than in all of 2010. Did you find similar reports elsewhere?
Well, we've asked for data from Alaska, but they have not responded. I'd really like to know what's going on there.
Well, how much radiation did drop on the United States? Can you put any numbers to this?
I wish I could answer you that question, and it's an absolutely essential question. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was measuring the levels weekly here in the United States, and then in their own wisdom, they decided that quarterly would be enough. And I find it appalling because this is a unique opportunity in the history of the world to collect meaningful data, and the United States EPA is not doing it.
And another question comes to my mind. Were most of the deaths old people? We've talked about babies, but were there also a lot of old people who might have died anyway?
We elderly people are all of us are going to die. It's just that when you know what the average death statistics are, and it increased that period of time. I mean, we pretty well know what's going on, and this was a marked increase.
I hate to harp on this, but I know your critics will. I presume there are no death certificates saying that the cause of death was Fukushima radiation.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct.
So isn't it possible something else caused this rise in mortality rates, like a strain of flu or something?
Well, it certainly could have, but, you know, if you're compromised, your immune system is compromised, your chances of not surviving flu are increased.
Were the methods you chose standard and acceptable to others who study disease and mortality statistics?
Oh, yes, because this paper was submitted for peer review. We have no idea who the peer reviewers were. I mean, that's done, for the people who write papers, that's done blindly. So we don't know who peer reviewed it, but they did pass the paper, and they did say it was acceptable for publication.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're talking with Dr. Jeanette Sherman. She's co-author of a new study showing perhaps 14,000 Americans may have died from radiation released at the Japanese nuclear power plant in Fukushima. Jeanette, most governments and media talk only about external radiation rather than the so-called hot particles that are taken inside the body. Can you talk about the difference and which types of radiation might have caused these extra deaths?
We're talking strictly about the isotopes that are taken into the body. And a normally functioning nuclear power plant releases about over 100 isotopes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, Fukushima released many, many, many isotopes, but the ones that are mostly measured were the cesium, cesium-134, 137, the iodines, iodine-134. They did not do much in the way of measurements of strontium-90, but should be. And there were plutonium and many other isotopes that were released. As these are taken in by way of water and food, they concentrate in various parts of the body. Now, cesium is in the same family of chemicals as potassium. So cesium goes to all soft tissues in the body, including muscles and breast and pancreas and places like that. Strontium goes to the bones and teeth, and iodine goes to the thyroid gland. The unborn really have to have an adequate source of thyroid function, and if their thyroids are damaged, they don't do well. And I think we're seeing increased baby deaths because of this.
In addition to this fast rise in deaths, would you still expect an increase in cancer in North America in the coming decades due to the Fukushima accident?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm the editor of the Chernobyl book that was published by the New York Academy of Sciences. It's called Chernobyl: Consequences of the Catastrophe for Human and the Environment, Humans and the Environment. What happened after Chernobyl was there was a marked increase in thyroid disease and thyroid cancer, as well as in leukemia. Now, we did not publish this paper to scare people half to death or anything like that, but public health of people need to be prepared because we're going to be seeing these diseases in North America as a result of the fallout from Fukushima.
And you said it spread throughout the Northern Hemisphere, so I presume that governments in the UK and Europe, perhaps even Russia, should also be aware of this risk.
Yes, and I think they did get fairly good measurements in Europe, better than we got here in the United States.
You've talked about the public health angle, and I'm wondering, you know, I mean, the government and the media, they failed to warn us about these risks. Were there public health measures or personal steps we could have taken to reduce the casualties and the impact?
Well, if you're in the proximity of a nuclear release, particularly because of the iodine-131, one can take potassium iodide, but it has to be taken within the first 24 hours. So unless it's stockpiled in people's houses, then it's not going to work. And we have a law on the books here in the United States that potassium iodide is supposed to be available at all nuclear power plants. Well, I can't imagine people driving to some center to pick up potassium iodine tablets when, you know, if there's a nuclear release.
Well, what about just simple things like putting on a breathing mask to keep some of the particles out or staying out of the rain if it's raining, if you know there's been an accident? Would that help?
Well, I think it might help, but the biggest problem is the fallout on food. And we don't have a monitoring system, certainly not in this country, to determine what the food levels are. And my great concern is the marvelous fisheries along Alaska and British Columbia. And I don't know if anybody is doing measurements on fish to find out if they're contaminated or not, but the millions and millions of gallons of contaminated water is spreading, you know, throughout the Pacific.
Our Canadian government announced that they definitely would not be doing any testing. So, and then they sort of reversed themselves and said, well, maybe they would. So it's kind of up in the air. Well, look, I'm going to bet, Janet Sherman, that your study gets very little mainstream press. We won't see big headlines because this news is so horrible and unexpected. We have a gut reaction to protect ourselves by not believing it. Have you had criticism already?
Oh, of course. I mean, we've been, you know, called, you know, alarmists and cherry-picking our data, but this is pretty standard epidemiology, and unless the principles of biology and chemistry are rescinded, we are going to see this damage because these isotopes follow the normal isotopes throughout all living matter and result in harm. And we know, for instance, from Chernobyl, where they didn't test every living system, but wild animals, domestic animals, plants, birds, fish, bacteria, viruses, all were affected by the releases from Chernobyl. And we're going to see that, you know, around the world. Far worse, you know, the closer you are to Japan, but certainly throughout the Northern Hemisphere.
And Jeanette, what research needs to be done now and, you know, when it comes to the impacts of Fukushima?
I think we need to have publicly available measurements in food and milk, dairy products, meat and fish, and available to people and easily available on the internet so people can find this information. I do know there's some volunteers who are collecting radiation levels, the information on radiation levels using GPS with Geiger counters in various places of Japan, which is absolutely brilliant because they can pinpoint what the levels are and where they are. We need to have monitoring in North America, in Canada and the United States, certainly.
Just as a public health protection, I would think we would have it, but apparently we don't, or we have it in a very haphazard way. As we wrap up, is there something else that you would like to talk to our listeners about?
I just say don't panic, but push your local government, and if necessary, then the various fisheries who are catching, you know, particularly the wonderful salmon and the halibut, should do their own measurements and certify what their levels are.
Thank you. Our guest has been toxicologist and internist Jeanette Sherman. She is adjunct professor of Western Michigan University and a contributing editor of the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. Jeanette is also the author of the book Chemical Exposure and Disease and Life's Delicate Balance, The Causes and Prevention of Breast Cancer. Find out more at JeanetteSherman.com, and Jeanette has two T's in it. Find links to news articles, audio, and the published paper we're talking about in my blog at ecoshock.info. Jeanette, thank you so much for your years of work and for looking at what many of us don't want to see.
Well, thank you, I mean, for your service. This is very important, the work you're doing.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Can this really be true? Did an extra 14,000 Americans die from Fukushima? The subtitle of the December 19th press release reads, "Impact seen as roughly comparable to radiation-related deaths after Chernobyl. Infants are hardest hit, with continuing research showing even higher possible death counts." This takes us into one of the most controversial areas of nuclear affairs. What is the safe level of radiation? Study after study admit there is no safe level of radiation. Reading further from the RPHP press release, quote, "Just 6 days after the disastrous meltdown struck four reactors at Fukushima on March 11th, scientists detected the plume of toxic fallout had arrived over American shores. Subsequent measurements by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, found levels of radiation in air, water, and milk hundreds of times above normal across the U.S. The highest detected levels of iodine-131 in precipitation in the U.S. were as follows, and normal is about 2 picocuries of iodine-131 per liter of water. 2 picocuries per 131 per liter of water. Boise, Idaho, 390. Kansas City, 200. Salt Lake City, 190. Jacksonville, Florida, 150. Olympia, Washington, 125. And Boston, Massachusetts, 92. End quote. So there is no doubt elevated levels of radiation was measured by the American government all across the country, but especially on the West Coast. Radio EcoShock ran an interview in the spring of 2011 with a Canadian scientist at Simon Fraser University who also measured elevated levels of radioactivity on Canada's West Coast. The RPHP press release says, quote, "The CDC issues weekly reports on numbers of deaths for 122 U.S. cities with a population over 100,000, or about 25-30% of the U.S. In the 14 weeks after Fukushima fallout arrived in the U.S., that's March 20th to June 25th, deaths reported to the CDC rose 4.46% from the same period in 2010, compared to just 2.34% in the 14 weeks prior. Estimated excess deaths during this period for the entire U.S. is about 14,000, end quote. The government reports an unusual rise in deaths without any explanation. We know radiation hit North America and can be harmful, especially to infants in the uterus and up to 1 year of age. Jeanette Shermett says adults with compromised immune systems, perhaps after cancer treatment, for example, are also vulnerable to more radiation, like that generated by Fukushima. The Radiation and Public Health Project also posted a 42-minute audio press conference with journalists. I note that no major news sources attended, not Associated Press or Reuters. One journalist asked if there could be multiple causes beyond Fukushima for these excess deaths, and Joseph Mangano agreed there could be other causes as well. He called for more research to find out. Mangano answered another doubt with this explanation of three cases where low-level radiation impacts were denied, but then finally admitted by the government or the courts.
This is Joseph Mangano. I'll take that. Any statement such as the one you just mentioned, i.e. the levels of radiation exposure are too low to cause harm, are in conflict with the agreement of expert scientists. I'll refer you to a report, a Blue Ribbon panel called BEIR, B-E-I-R, 7, Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation. They have produced seven reports over the years, and in their most recent one, 2005, they agreed that based on hundreds and hundreds of scientific articles, that even at low doses, there is risk to humans. And I'll follow that by giving three examples of historically where there were assumptions that low doses were not harmful to people, only to have that belief overturned. Number one is the practice of giving pregnant women abdominal x-rays, which doctors did not to harm people, but simply for diagnostic purposes to see, you know, how big the baby was and where the position was. The first article showing that this practice raised childhood cancer risk to the fetus took place in the late 1950s. It was met by a huge wave of opposition by obstetricians, by radiologists, by the nuclear industry. More articles came out about that, and finally, in the late 1970s, this practice was discontinued. The second example was the fallout from atomic bomb tests in Nevada in the 1950s and 60s. For years, government officials declared no harm until 1997, when the National Cancer Institute put out a report estimating that up to 212,000 Americans developed thyroid cancer alone from the iodine in bomb fallout. The third one is the case of workers in nuclear weapons plants, which, again, for years, the government measured their doses and declared that they were below, quote, safe permissible limits. Well, in the year 2000, the Energy Department put out a report stating that there was, based on dozens of articles, the workers were, in fact, susceptible to a variety of cancers, and now there is a program to compensate former workers with cancer. In summary, there's a basic dynamic here, which starts with an assumption of low doses being harmless, only to find out that after study, in fact, the opposite is true. So I think we must maintain an open mind here when studying Fukushima.
And here is a further key statement by Mangano in the press conference, namely that 14,000 people may have been killed due to Fukushima, but the researchers cannot actually prove that happened.
A correction. We haven't said that the Fukushima did, in fact, cause these excess, but may have caused. I want to make that quite clear. It's a clarion call for more extensive research.
Given that doubt, I find the headline for the study press release misleading. We don't know Fukushima caused 14,000 American deaths. But the thrust of the study seems valid, that it is possible, and the government has made no effort to find out why people died more after Fukushima. It seems biologically reasonable to me that many people in fragile states, whether infants or adults with medical problems, died following the blast of Fukushima, radiation hitting the North American coast and right over the whole continent, and Europe for that matter. When critics keep citing weak external radiation numbers, you know they are dodging the real risk of ingesting long-lived radioactive particles through food and water. I would also expect more cancers to develop in the population during the coming decades due to exposure to radioactive particles from the Fukushima nuclear accident. That is just common medical knowledge, as we learn from the Chernobyl accident as well. Be sure to find all our Fukushima links in this show blog at ecoshock.info. Find all our past programs as free MP3 downloads and subscribe to our free podcast at ecoshock.org. I'm your host, Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening and for caring about your world.